Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. In just a few weeks, school will begin, and that includes the class of 2031, children who will be going to kindergarten for the first time. I know, I have to always just take a step back when I say that, the class of 2031. But yes, they will be going to kindergarten in just a few weeks. Hundreds of kindergartners and their parents will be attending WITS 8th Ready, Set, Go kindergarten event tomorrow morning at the Public Media Center. It's an important time for those students academically and socially. But education doesn't just begin in kindergarten. Early childhood is the subject of our discussion on today's program. Joining us, Debbie Rick, WITF's Education Coordinator, Janice Black, President of the Foundation for Enhancing Communities, Jennifer Doyle, Vice President of Development for the Foundation for Enhancing Communities, and Christy Rangelian, Executive Director of Child Care Consultants. Welcome to the program, ladies.
Thank you.
If you have a question or comment about early childhood education, about starting kindergarten, early childhood years, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. I want to start with Debbie Rick, who is WITF's Education Coordinator, who I don't get to have on the air often enough. She's very shy.
And,
but anyway, Debbie, let's talk about Ready, Set, Go Kindergarten. This is the eighth one. Let's talk about its purpose, the goal of this event.
Sure. So we started this event, as you said, 8 years ago. Kind of grew from an experience we had when our twins were getting ready to go to kindergarten, who are now 13.
Our twins, meaning?
Oh, yeah, not our twins, but my family's twins.
Okay, right.
And this is starting great, Scott.
I know.
We were at an event that was for getting ready for kindergarten, and my husband said as we left, wow, you know, that was really fun for the girls, but if I had questions when I came as a parent, I still have those questions. Like, there wasn't really anything to support that. And so we built this event to help celebrate that big transition between preschool and kindergarten for not just the child, but for the whole family, because it is designed to be super fun for the child all day, lots of great things to do, and for the family to also help kind of alleviate some of those fears or concerns they might have. Because in some respects, I think the transition is bigger for grownups than it is for their children, which is, you know, it's a pretty big transition. But as I said when I was talking about this event earlier, I said, you know, if you ever watch one of those cooking shows on TV and they're like, I wish you were here so you could smell how delicious this is. I wish you were here in the Public Media Center so you could see how fun this looks now and how much fun it will be tomorrow morning.
Anna is one of our producers here, who's taking some photographs. Let's get a picture of the Public Media Center in the atrium of just to provide, put it on our website to give a lot of our listeners an opportunity to see exactly what Debbie is talking about. But okay, a couple questions there, Debbie. Mm-hmm. Many of us, most of us, have been through what you described as parents, that those fears and wondering about what kindergarten is going to be like, the transition. What kind of fears do parents have that this event is designed to address?
All of our activities at this event, from sponsor activities, from the activities that we design for kids to interact with and play with, are designed to model the same thing we model at all of our children's events, that children learn best when we don't say to them, let's sit down, you sit down, little body that's meant to dance and play, while I talk to you, and we're going to look at these flashcards, and we're going to do it like this. That kind of learning doesn't really work for young children, really. I would say for anybody. Nobody really learns well that way. But all of our activities are designed to model for families that play is best. We're going to show families how they can interact with their children in an academic way that is playful, that doesn't involve asking children to sit and wait and listen, but to actively participate, because that really engages the child. It makes their brain get really excited about learning, and that's how learning sticks.
Mm-hmm. And we talk about Ready, Set, Go kindergarten as helping children and the parents mm-hmm. make the transition from preschool to kindergarten. Have all the children who will be here tomorrow had preschool or had early childhood education?
No.
Formal early childhood education.
No, of course not. And we know lots of things about that, that there are a lot of kids in Harrisburg. What was the number you said, Janice? 895?
About 895.
That are waiting on a wait list to be involved in programs like Head Start. We know, I don't know what Child Care Consultants wait list looks like, but.
Right. Child Care Consultants, and we're now serving the seven county area, has probably about 1,000 kids on both of the waiting lists, and the child at the top of the list applied for services for support to help them pay for childcare back in February. So it's about a 5-month wait list for families that have already been determined to be eligible.
Mm. And we're going to talk about all those things, too. Go ahead, Debbie.
And I'm definitely not saying that you have to be in a preschool program to be ready to go to kindergarten, but what those numbers say to me is that there is a real, that families recognize, I'd love to have my child in a program like that, but those services either might not be available or might not be available in their area, or there might not be a space for that. Like, there's any number of issues that can stand in that way. But we are excited to, and we know too, that Ready, Set, Go Kindergarten 4 hours isn't going to, you know, all of a sudden make you ready to go to kindergarten. But we know a lot of things that we'll be talking about today that families can do anytime to support their child's learning.
What skills does a child need to get ready for kindergarten?
So there's a lot of different interpretations of what that means. So we have some information available at the new WITF Path to Kindergarten Starts Here website, and I can give you that link, which is ready.witf.org, that has a full, like, all different kinds of interpretations of that.
But great website, by the way.
Well, thank you. But for from my perspective personally, the things that I hear kindergarten teachers say is a lot of what people call soft skills, like being able to wait and take a turn, being able to zip your pants, being able to know that when you sneeze in your hands, you want to wash those. Because a lot of the things I think that families get nervous about, like, I don't know if they can write their name. I don't know if they know all their letters and which, and to identify those correctly.
They can't read yet.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Those kinds of skills are the skills that kindergarten teachers are anxious to teach and anxious and ready and prepared to help your child learn. The things, reading with your child, sitting together and finding a book at the library that they love and sharing that together in a really wonderful way is great. Those are the kind of skills. And it's so interesting because when we talk about research and brain research, people are like, oh, wow, that sounds hard. But what research says is interact with your child, talk to them, talk about what you're doing. So the things that we want to do with young children are the things that every piece of research is saying, yeah, do those things. Mm.
This is probably WITF's most popular public event. In the 7 years prior to today, how many people are we talking about and what do you expect tomorrow?
So,
and it is a free event, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. And we just ask folks if they can help us by RSVPing on WITF.org/education. We've had over 5,000 people at the events. This year, our registration, our RSVP is around 1,000 right now. And it's such a fun day to see families. They're so excited and their children are so excited. Kids get a little cinch bag that says class of 2031
on their
back.
I know. That just blows my mind.
It's so sweet because parents are, they want to take the photo because they're excited. At the same time, they're like, no.
It's real now.
It's real. This is really happening.
Well, and folks, again, 1,000 people in WITF Public
it's
Media
great.
Center.
It's wonderful.
It really is. It really is. All right, but I do have a favor to ask.
Yeah.
You told us a story in a meeting yesterday about the phone call you got from a grandmother. If you would, repeat that story.
It was really sweet. And, if she's listening, hi, Nora. but she was really sweet on the phone. She called and she said, My granddaughter said, she grabbed my hand and she said, "You have to look at this." And it was one of the promos, and it was a flyer and a promo about Ready, Set, Go Kindergarten. She said,
Where'd she see it? On TV?
I think so. On
WITF
TV.
Yeah. TV.
And she said, my granddaughter said, "We have to go to this because I'm going to kindergarten and I have to go to this." And she said, "So I don't know what we're talking about, but I need to get her there because she's going to kindergarten and she has to be a part of this." And we have great, there's so many great stories and moments where children are with their family at this event that I just love. It's like my Christmas at WITF.
And Nora also, Debbie pointed out that we don't have parallel parking.
Yeah, that's right. We have plenty of parking, an ample parking lot.
That is very true. Now, we're going to talk more about early childhood education in just a moment. But, Debbie, can people who are listening still participate tomorrow?
Yes, they can. We still have room. You can go to WITF.org. /education and click on the Ready, Set, Go Kindergarten button to RSVP. Or if my phone number is there, if you have questions or you need direction about it, I'm happy to help you do that. We would love to have your family here.
Okay, Debbie. And we're going to keep Debbie on the show for the rest of it because I'm going to have her ask questions here because she's already told me what signal she's going to use.
Do the show, Scott. Let's go.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Our guest today, we're talking with Debbie Rick, WITF's Education Coordinator, Janice Black, President of the Foundation for Enhancing Communities, Jennifer Doyle, Vice President of Development for the Foundation for Enhancing Communities, Christy Rangillian, who is Executive Director of Child Care Consultants. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. I'm going to take some phone calls in just a moment, but I want to bring the three of you into the conversation as well. Early childhood education, why is it so important? And let me have you come over just a little bit because I can't see you.
Absolutely.
But why is early childhood education so important?
Well, I think this is Jennifer Doyle from the Foundation, and early education is so much more than playing. When it comes time to send little ones to a pre-K program, it's social, it's emotional, it's physical health, it's mental health. And I think one of the biggest reasons it's so important to families is it is that school readiness opportunity. It's getting them ready to go on to their academic career and into the rest of their lives. I think early education provides an opportunity for kiddos to be with peers, which, of course, builds their confidence. It also is an opportunity to have that child be in a diverse situation that they might not be experiencing at home. And then it also provides a really great bond between the kiddo and their parents and engages the family in being part of that child's education and really being that child's first teacher.
Now, your organization, the Foundation for Enhancing Communities, I mean, this isn't the only thing you do. Obviously, you enhance communities. But what is your role in early childhood education?
Wow, that's a big question. We've actually been in the early education space specifically since 2006. And over those years, not including the grants that we make as a community foundation, which of course includes funding in early education, but specifically in this area, we've invested well over $1 million. And we also are committed in the next 4 years to increasing that to another $1 million. Investing in our kids today, and I know this leads into some of the other topics for this morning, is investing in tomorrow's workforce. And that's a whole nother conversation. Education builds community. And I think there's a lot to be said for enhancing and growing our communities and everyone's involvement and responsibility to that.
But Janice Black, you're the president of the organization. What was just described there, so many people think of education and community as higher education or maybe even high school, that junior or senior year in high school. They probably don't think about 12 years down the road, 15 years down the road for the education that youngsters are getting and how that contributes to the community.
You're right. And actually, if you think about the little kids that are going to kindergarten today, they are going to be our workforce in 20 years. And so the foundation really, the board of the foundation really wanted all of us to really focus on helping parents prepare their kids for kindergarten. So many times they don't really know what they have to do to get the child ready to go to kindergarten, and they themselves are not ready for the child to go to kindergarten. So that's what we've been doing. We've been really trying to educate our folks in our region about what you have to do to get your child ready and how important it is. And the next phase that we're going to be doing, Scott, is really helping corporations in our region to understand that they need to be our partners and that we all need to work together, because so many times I hear corporations say, we really don't have the workforce that we need.
Hear it often.
Right. And so the only way that we can really think about that all together, in our opinion, is to get together, come together, and really make a plan to really get these little ones to be the best they can be in 20 years so that when they hire them, they're ready.
But, Janice, so often we as a society think short term. It's, I mean, as Debbie described, parents today are just concerned, worried about their five-year-old making that transition to kindergarten. They're not thinking, and I'm not just talking about parents, but society as a whole, thinking about this little person 20 years from now will be our workforce and needs a good start on their education.
And if they don't get that good start, they are behind, and many times they are not able to catch up. We all know that, those of us that work in this area. These little ones are behind their entire journey through school, and so many times that leads to problems. They get into problems in society and have major problems later in life. So what we really want to do is to help people understand that while you're really happy for the little one today and corporations are busy doing their work and everything, that part of their responsibility really is to help the community to be even more ready by helping these families and these kids now to be the best they can be. Because the more they're nurtured, the more they're ready, the better they can receive the education and the play that Debbie was talking about. So it's just all of us working together.
We'll take some phone calls in just a moment. But Christy Rangelian, your Executive Director of Child Care Consultants. Child care, people hear that, they think there may be some people who think, okay, this is where I want to, you know, take my child when the parents are working. I hate to use the word babysitter, but there are probably some people who think of that. Your organization is not just advising people on a good place to go to take your safe place, quality child care. Well, it is quality child care, but it's education as well. Talk about that, if you will.
Sure. So child care consultants, we ourselves don't actually run child care programs. We work with child care programs in 13 counties to help them improve the quality of services that they provide to the children and families. And you're right, it's not babysitting. We know, research tells us, that brains are developing at the greatest speed in those early years, from birth to age 5. So even before they go to kindergarten, the foundation really starts at birth. And so what we have been doing, the state and OCTEL, the Office of Child Development, Early Learning, private dollars and child care consultants, is really looking at the education for the teachers, what they're doing with the curriculum. There are standards for child care programs. And my child care programs, I mean all kinds of programs, Head Start, pre-K counts, the traditional child care or daycare that people used to call it, of thinking about that for working family, as well as those part-day preschool programs, many of them in faith-based settings. And there are standards for those young children that are aligned with those same K through 12 standards. And as Debbie mentioned, it's all related to play. How do children learn math by playing with blocks? Because they do. How do they learn colors and shapes and pre-language skills through reading and listening to stories and sorting laundry and all kinds of things? So part of what makes the Ready, Set, Go program tomorrow, and we're proud to have participated these past 7 years and we'll be here tomorrow, is that you don't have to go out and buy a lot of fancy toys and equipment, but that through reading to your child and using things that you probably already have at your home, you can help your child learn through play, learn through everyday activities, and really the child care programs of today are doing education not babysitting.
But you use the word curriculum. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about 1 to 5-year-olds, curriculum sounds like, you know, it's so formalized that from the time a 6-month-old or a 1-year-old reaches, you know, a child, you know, some of the programs that you're talking about, that it's very structured.
Well, it's interesting because, yes, we do use the word curriculum, and there is formal curriculum for infants, toddlers, and preschoolers. But it's not as the public and most people imagine and associate the word curriculum with a K-12 or a higher ed setting. Mm-hmm. So that curriculum in the infant room or the toddler room is, how am I going to help these children think about math through playing with Legos, through playing with blocks? That's geometry. That's sorting. That's classification. That's all those math skills. So it's not curriculum, as Debbie was saying earlier, of these children are going to be sitting in desks and chairs, and I'm going to give them a Ditto sheet, and we're going to start drilling, counting, and flashcards. But we're passing out forks at the getting ready for lunch in the preschool room. We can count these forks and do things like that. So. And it's not just the math and the numbers, as Jen and others we've been talking about. It's all those social skills. How am I going to learn to interact with my peers? How am I going to be able to sit next to a child and not be poking and prodding? And as we talk about, you know, the impact on businesses, we often also hear businesses talk about what's the really hard piece of hiring new employees is those soft skills. Are they going to be a functioning member of my team and my organization? Do they have those soft skills? Because I can teach them the task of their job so much easier than you can teach an adult to play nice with their coworkers.
Yeah, Jennifer said talked about you know, the workforce of tomorrow, and Debbie talked about soft skills. I hear that so often from prospective employers that soft skills, there are so many young people who have graduated from college or gotten out of a training program, that not showing up at work on time or, you know, just those soft skills of how to interact with the public. And as far as prodding and poking, do you have a class for teenagers for that? Because I'm sure Debbie knows all that. Debbie, there was something you wanted to say?
Oh, I just was going to share that one of my favorite things when I visit childcare centers is to watch a really, really skilled infant teacher with a baby, holding a baby, talking to a baby, and taking those pauses in language that almost is expecting the baby to reply. And so the teacher's eyes are on the baby's eyes are on the teacher. The teacher is saying things like, you're ready for school. I can see you're all ready to be here today. And then pauses, and the baby just looks. And then the teacher, it's almost like they teach them that rhythm of language, which, you know, I think some of us take for granted, but that pausing is so essential. And the baby will engage until the baby is finished, and then the baby will look to the side like, I'm over you. and that's just amazing to watch.
Right. And the research is showing that that really is the best way to develop young children, that those positive interactions with a caring adult and that serve and return is what Dr. Jack Shafkoff from Harvard calls that. That interaction back and forth is really what makes a difference.
Hmm. Let's take some phone calls. Go to Patrick in Mount Joy. Patrick, you're on the air. Hello, Patrick?
Yes, I hear you.
Yeah,
hey, Scott.
Yeah, listen to the telephone rather than the radio. What's your question or comment, Patrick?
Okay. Apropos of the discussion of neurological development, how do your experts feel about parents getting their kids in front of screens, you know, iPhones, tablets? How do they feel that that is affecting childhood development?
Thank you very much for your call. Great question, especially with so many young people who start very, very early with the screen time, whether it be television. Now, we encourage them to watch WITF-TV's kids' programs, by the way, but not in excess. But what he's talking about, today's children have so much access to screen time, and unfortunately, there are many parents that the TV ends up being the babysitter. Mm-hmm. Debbie, what were you going to say?
I would say a couple of things about that. The one thing is that it's exciting and fun about my job. And a lot of people have said, you know, I don't necessarily understand why a public media center has someone that works with young children. What's the story there? But that what I get to do is help children interact with the things they see, which I think is sometimes confusing. TV is a very abstract thing, whether it's on a phone or, you know, on a screen, but they get to play with these ideas. And the PBS model really is a model of co-viewing, that we're encouraging families to sit with their children, interact with their children, watch with their children, and then go play with their children. And I do think that the concept of constant screen interaction without that play piece is problematic. Mm-hmm. It's not good for their brains. It's not what children need. Children need that face-to-face.
And it's not good physically either.
No, it's they need that face-to-face interaction, real things, touching real things. And sometimes, you know, that the things that they can't touch for real, maybe if they live in an area not near the ocean, but we can show those kinds of things. But then we need to create ways to play with those ideas if we want anything to kind of to stick.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a phone call here from Hilga in Ephrata. Hilga, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Hello. I am so excited about this topic, and thank you very much, NPR, and thank you for this program, because this is how I'm learning. This is how I'm getting my education, and it's free. and I am retired from the school district of Lancaster, where I taught without a degree, and I was involved in a few different things, visiting homes, working with truant students once when I worked at Reynolds, etc. And I was on the board of directors with an idea concerning homeless student workshops and after school study centers, and I recently learned that they're still intact. The name has been changed to protect the stigma, but I have been planning and left a message recently with the district that I would love to come back on board, mainly because of this issue of how children learn and what I'm seeing in the community with mental illness, children with parents that are not able to give them touch.
So you're endorsing everything that our panel's discussing today.
Absolutely. And I think that one of the most fulfilling jobs that I had with the district was a position that I made myself, which was visiting homes. And I think that that is so tremendously important, because our children are having problems with education, with learning, with behavior. And it all goes back to parenting. And I feel that we can open many positions, volunteer positions, any major positions can be opened by going into the homes, and I think it's so important.
All right.
Going into the homes, seeing how these children learn, seeing how they're affected by parents that don't touch them anymore. Instead, they give them electronics.
Yeah.
And
hey, Hilga, I hate to interrupt you, but I'm going to have to move on. Thank you very much for your call. But Janice, what she was talking about, with interacting with children at home, parents' roles in it, you know, what we've been discussing today, there may be some people out there listening who will be saying, you know, that's fine if you can afford early childhood education, a formal, you know, curriculum or a place that has a curriculum. But as you said earlier, 895 on a waiting list. Mm-hmm. So not every child has access to this. Not every parent takes the kind of interest in this as the parents who are coming with their children tomorrow to Ready, Set, Kindergarten. What about those kids?
Well, those are the ones that are home maybe with their parents or grandma or Aunt Sue or somebody, a neighbor, and they're all being taken care of, but they're not being stimulated perhaps the way that those are as they are in daycare. One thing that I would recommend is really to help your child learn how to share, because one of the major things when you get to a job that we were talking about is being able to share and being part of a team. And how do you do that? You really have to help your child realize that they're not the only one. They have to share their toys. They have to learn to share their food. They have to learn to be a partner to others. Going to daycare or a group of kids is the way that you get to do that. So if you can't afford to bring your child to a daycare, invite other little kids in and help them all to get along by learning how to share the toys that are there, reading to them, helping them to understand that they're part of a little group and that everybody has to get along. Because as kids grow up, that's what work is. You have to be part of a group, and you have to be able to share and be part of a team.
But how do you – I mean, we've all done it ourselves as parents, and we've seen other parents do it. Like, oh, I'm going to use old-time names, Johnny. it used to be, what, Dick and Jane in the books? That was before your time.
You know? It was my time.
I'd say mine too. But, Johnny, now that's not nice. You have to share. Why? My guess is that Johnny doesn't realize why he has to share.
True. And that's what I think having more kids in, helping people to learn that they really have to show Johnny that he needs to be nice and to let Susie use his truck or to let another little boy use whatever he has just to be able to get along together.
Right. And I think that there's other opportunities that are free opportunities for families to engage their children with groups of other children. The libraries are tremendous resources throughout Pennsylvania, and nearly every branch of a library has a family reading time, a story time that is free. And those story times give opportunities for children and parents to interact with each other and have those opportunities for sharing, for learning, for reading, for the modeling that Deb and I were talking about earlier, about how is it that I'm reading this book to my child? How is it that I'm talking to my child, that I'm asking those open-ended questions and not just, you know, stop that, sit here, you know,
right.
But really...
Right. You know, Christy, this is kind of off the subject a little bit, but no, because it's talking about the importance of libraries. I actually saw something on social media this week that was an article questioning the need for libraries today with, the internet and so many resources available to children, adults, that why do we need a place where people can actually go borrow books? Well, there's more to it than that.
Absolutely.
And a library is a major part of the community, and just what you're describing here, the roles of libraries, okay, maybe it's a little bit different than what it used to be, but it's still a major institution in our communities.
Absolutely. And the library not only provides those services directly to the families through story time, through after-school programs for children, for tutoring, for computer labs, but libraries throughout our region also work directly with all different kinds of ECE programs.
So ECE?
Early Childhood Education. So childcare, Head Start, pre-K counts, those part-day preschool programs, those parent-child programs, to help those programs gain access to books. So that they can have books in their classrooms, they can have resources and education for their teachers about how to help children learn those pre-reading skills.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're speaking today about early childhood education as this is the day before WITF's annual and its eighth annual Ready, Set, Go kindergarten event at WITF's Public Media Center tomorrow. Our guest, Christy Rengillian, Executive Director of Child Care Consultants, Jennifer Doyle, Vice President of Development for the Foundation for Enhancing Communities, Janice Black, President of the Foundation for Enhancing Communities, and Debbie Rick, WITF's Education Coordinator. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. All right, let's take another phone call here from Steve in Minersville. Steve, you're on the air.
Hello, I'm really enjoying your conversation. My daughter is 2, and if you recall, I called in to try to see if I can get a cow named after her. But we couldn't really afford the leapfrogs, so what we did was we actually bought a $15 smartphone, and we preloaded it with a bunch of educational games that we use with her, and we actually control it with the Google parenting software.
So when you're...
My question is... Yeah?
No, go ahead.
Well, my question is a couple months ago, I heard about the 50,000-word program on Morning Edition, and now I'm worried that when my daughter eventually goes to, pre-K, she's already on a waiting list, but I'm worried that she's going to be language deficient. And that's my question.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. Worry is a big key here with what Steve asked. Debbie, you had a look on your face of recognition when he mentioned, what is the 50,000 word?
Yeah, so it's this concept, this idea that, and research-based, that children can fall behind in language due to exposure to words. And one of the things I was thinking about on my drive here is the value of these research pieces, they're so important, but sometimes I feel like that research piece gets people nervous and scared. Like, we know so much. And now we know so much. So it's like, oh, no. But the idea that it's not just exposure to individual words, but exposure to language in context, that were rich conversations. Christy used the term rich interactions, this idea that as you're talking with your children, you're sort of modeling for them language. So as you're cooking in the kitchen, you're saying things like, I'm going to put this in the pot. We're going to stir this together. You take a turn stirring. See how we're stirring? So it's this practice of language and the exposure to it in context, not this. I think sometimes we think of, we need to teach them words. So here's, this flashcard version of exposure to language, and it just doesn't work.
Yeah. Right. So it's not focusing on so much the number of words,
right,
or getting a dictionary or a glossary out for your 2-year-old, but as Debbie was saying, making sure that your home and your interaction with your child is language rich so that as you're doing everyday tasks, you're talking about them. And it may seem silly at first, but even starting that at the very youngest age, you're changing the baby's diaper, talking to the baby about what you're doing, talking to the baby about the day and what you're going to do next. Maybe you're going to the park, or you're going outside, or you're going grocery shopping, and, I got the apple and it's red, and those kinds of things. All of that is developing your child's brain and developing their ability to learn language. And that's what's going to make them start kindergarten ready and without the deficit. Not that you've done flashcards and a list of how many words you've said, but that you're really just communicating with the child. And again, you don't have to buy fancy equipment.
But let me interrupt for just a second, because Steve brought up a point. He said that his daughter, they weren't able to get into leapfrogs, and I'm not familiar with leapfrogs. I love the names of some of the organizations, some of the schools. I'm assuming that is a preschool.
Well, actually, I think he's probably talking about leapfrog, which is a device, and it's electronic game. So that's the leapfrog.
I was thinking it was. I was thinking
some child care centers do have great names, though.
Right. So it could be a leapfrog is the name of a child care.
But the point he was making about children who may not be able to go to preschool or have a formalized education before kindergarten. He was talking about learning games online. Mm. Are they helpful?
I think they're helpful. As Debbie said earlier, if you're using them while you're interacting with the child, and if it's not the only thing you're doing. Because again, children learn best while they're doing and while they're playing. So that you can take that online educational game, use that, but then go outside, go do something together, interact together, and adapt that through play.
And I would also say just use real care. I think sometimes the marketing of those games can be really sound great, but you just want to use real care that the content is appropriate, age appropriate for the child, and just in general appropriate.
Yes.
So just a caution.
You know,
absolutely.
Jennifer Doyle, one of the things that we've been talking about is access. And there are some barriers out there. What kind of barriers are there, and how can they be overcome?
Absolutely. And to the point where we were just talking about these devices and things that you can do to provide your kiddos with, there are a lot of folks that don't have access to those things. And so what resources are available for them? Libraries, one of the best resources. Events like that is happening here tomorrow, another great event. There are organizations out there in the community that will work with you and provide those resources for you. The foundation, I know, one of our big commitments is to our calendar. So we have a free resource available for families called Jumpstart Kindergarten, and it's an 18-month calendar. It's regionalized, so all of our communities that we serve, there's resources and information in there, and every day there's an activity that you can do with your child at no cost. And these are things, again, if you don't have the ability to have a Leapfrog or have those devices in your home, the activities are all based on things that you can do every day with your kiddo. Barriers and access are one of the big focuses of the foundation's work in early education, as is engaging families. And barriers look different based on the community. So one of the things we learned 3 years ago through our needs assessment in early education specifically is, for example, in Perry County, transportation is a huge barrier. And so what do you do about that?
Other rural areas, same
absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. The barriers look different based on the community that you're in. So some of the grant work specifically that we're doing at the foundation is providing $55,000 to our grantees over the next several years to remove barriers, whatever that looks like in the community.
And by the way, we have links to all the organization, to your web, to your websites on our website, WITF.org. So if you want to get to it quickly, you can do that this morning. We have an email here from Gary. He says, one of the reasons my family fully supports the Montessori school system is that they have been teaching for decades the methods that some organizations are now using with regard to child development. Preschool should not be a boot camp for our public kindergartens, which the vast majority are still using draconian teaching methods with unreasonable expectations. Our child was diagnosed with ASD, and we were told by the IU that it would be better to have him fail in kindergarten rather than send him to Montessori, where he has thrived. It really comes down to numbers and money with regard to Pennsylvania public schools. I fully support the right for education choice, charter, and cyber schooling because of this. There's a lot there.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
I think that I would agree that there are all different kinds of models of early education and K-12 education. And Montessori has been a very successful model and curriculum, again, using that word very broadly, for education. And I think that there, I personally know many children who have thrived in Montessori programs. I agree that it has a good background to that. And I think that's part of what we do at Child Care Consultants is we work with families. We provide free resource and referral services to help them determine what is best for their child and for their family.
Every child's different.
Every child is different.
And learns at a different pace.
Exactly. And learns at a different pace and learns in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very important to recognize that, to reflect on that, and we can help parents with resources and tools through that. To Jennifer's point, we also produce calendars. We have two calendars specifically focused on STEM activities, one for infants and toddlers and school agers. And then we also, the resource aspect of what Child Care Consultants has done since its inception back in the 80s, is we have a whole slew of resources that we can provide for free to families on a wide variety of topics for their children.
Let's take a phone call from Sammy in Carlisle. Sammy, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Scott. doctors. I was talking to a lady who's in a nursing home now, and I think has been mislabeled, but that's another subject.
Another topic on the show, yeah.
The point I ask her is that, how did you make such a smart kid who's now a doctor of mathematics? And she had a very simple answer. I read to him until he fell asleep.
So,
I want to add an asterisk to that. Huh?
Okay, go ahead.
And then I want to add, until the reader falls asleep.
Happened more than I can count.
Yeah. Hey, Sammy, thank you very much for your call. But the point he makes, and it's, it kind of reinforces what the four of you have been talking about, how important it is. It's not just reading, but it is that connection between parent and child, and even the content of what they're reading.
It was interesting when we were talking about libraries. What I was thinking about was, it is so important for children to, you know, practice being with other kids and to build that sort of community. But it's really important for the grown-ups too, because raising kids is hard work, and it. Some families are you know, don't have other close family, and it can feel very isolating. So when we're able to create opportunities, whether it's a story time or an event like we do, for families to meet each other and get to know each other and build those relationships amongst grown-ups, so that they're there to support each other and call each other and talk about these things together, is so important too.
Now, you've talked about the importance of play and the importance of learning in play. Let's face it, there are children today and families today that have so many activities going on that every single day of the week, okay, it's band practice today, soccer practice tomorrow, and Debbie, you have multiple kids, so you have multiple events going on the same day. But is that good to have such a I don't know, a regiment for kids like that? And, you know, one of the things, and this is kind of a pet peeve with me, is that as I was growing up, we were outside playing every single day on our own from morning to night. Mom called us in for dinner, and we didn't want to come in because we were still playing. Today, like to play baseball, for example, or to play soccer, there's so many kids playing that you have to be in a league. You have to have a uniform. You have to have coaches. You have to have referees. You have to have umpires. That kids don't seem to go out and do it on their own. All right, that's the end of my speech. But how do you keep them from becoming so regimented that they're not kids, that they have to follow instructions to know what to do?
I think a lot of that goes back to parenting and the engagement of the family. And I know I see this with my nephews who are 10 and 12. They are so busy. And I think the standards have changed. There's so many more requirements to going to school now. You know, you have to be in this, and you have to do this, and you have to be well-rounded, and you have to participate in that. And it comes back to the parent. And while the parent wants their child to be in sports and learn team sportships and learn individual sportsmanship, they need to make them go outside and play. It's when they're going outside and playing that they're learning those skills just in a different way. And they're using problem-solving skills, and they're building forts, and they're trying to figure those things out. And I think that's what's missing. And I think back to your very first question today, what are the benefits to families of early education? When you send your child to a quality early education program, if you have the ability to do that, the parent is then secure in what they're doing. They can be more productive at work. It gives them a sense of ease. And then it also allows them at night to interact and engage with their child, because they do know and they do trust that they're safe during the day and that they're getting those things that they need. I think it goes to creative parenting and family engagement.
I want to thank our guest today, Debbie Rick, WITF's education coordinator, Janice Black and Jennifer Doyle with the Foundation for Enhancing Communities, and Christy Rangelian, executive director of Child Care Consultants. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
We're going to have another fun program on Monday. We're going to talk about service dogs. That's part of our discussion on Monday.